In the town of Plymouth, Massachusetts, the fourth Thursday in November is the most celebrated day of the year. The table is set. The festivities have begun. But an uninvited guest has arrived. And this year, there will be no leftovers.
Guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum podcast, and a happy Thanksgiving from me, your host, Ryan, from coldsploitation.com, and joined on my co-host. His name is Martin. Did you forget my name?
No, I was going to let you introduce, but...
No, it's we've been doing this...
You just didn't grab onto that life vest.
No, because...
We is for 9 years.
It's been the same setup.
Hey guys, welcome to the Blood and Black Rum podcast. I'm Ryan from coldsploitation.com, and I'm here with my co-host Lauren. How's it going?
Well, I feel like I need to stop negating your ability to say your own name.
Well, it's you know what? Well, let's try that in year 10.
We're not there yet. We're not quite there yet.
This was too much of a transition. Too quickly.
Listen, if there's two things in the world I dislike, it's the way things are and change.
Yeah. Well, the change today is that it's very nearly Thanksgiving. It's upon us.
It's Friendsgiving.
It's true. We're recording this on Thanksgiving Eve. I think Thanksgiving Eve is a big drinking time, isn't it? You know, like a time to go out and like go to the bar and drink a lot and then hope for the next day that you're not going to be extremely hungover for your family dinner?
I don't know, but I was just at one of the local grocery stores around here. You'd think it was fun.
Why? Why did you do such a thing? Why would you go out on Thanksgiving Eve? That's like the conversation that we're about to have in this for this movie. Why would you do such a thing? Was there a last minute shopping you needed to get done? What?
Yeah, I needed a frozen pizza for dinner tonight.
Oh, wait, was that after my conversation and I had pizza? And
yeah.
I like how you did it. Well, yeah, but I like how you didn't take my inspiration. I made the pizza. We didn't buy frozen pizza. I got pizza. All right, we didn't make the dough. All right, but I got frozen pizza. I didn't get frozen pizza. I got pizza dough. I rolled it out. I put the sauce and the cheese and the pepperoni on it and threw it in the oven and baked it.
Man, you were saying "bam" like Emerald too.
It's honestly, it's much cheaper than frozen pizza. Get more out of it, and you have the satisfaction of feeling like you're a chef for 15 minutes as you put it together. And barring the point that you didn't actually like let the dough make the dough rise or anything like that, you just fucking bought it from a plastic package.
But no one needs to know that part.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you know.
There you show everybody a picture. Look at my homemade pizza.
Well, I can't be going out making homemade pizza when, like, tomorrow I'm going to be buried up my ass in Thanksgiving leftovers.
That is true.
So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're gonna get slammed with turkey and stuffing and all those fixins.
So it's either that or, you know, a sandwich. And I'm kind of a little sandwich out right now. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe in after this you're going to get turkey sandwiches and... You know, you mean up the wazoo with turkey. I mean, that's the thing with Thanksgiving for me. I don't really like turkey. And this year, we don't have that many people that come to our Thanksgiving. We have like 7 people, I think. And most of those people don't really like turkey that much. So said to my dad, well, you know what? Let's just do a really small turkey this year. Like you've got what, like a 12-pounder? All right, let's do this 12-pounder and that'll be fine. And what does my dad do? He goes out and buys a 19-fucking-pound turkey.
Of course.
For some... reason
you can't have a small plus two. They're like right now like 12 cents a pound.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you gotta He couldn't resist. I saw his face. I was actually in the grocery store when he was looking at the turkeys.
He's looking at the
turkeys. Couldn't resist. He turns around to me because I called out to him. I was like, hey, Dad. He turns around to me. He goes, 38 cents pound. Like with an amazed look on his face. He's like, he just couldn't resist it. He just couldn't walk out of the store without getting a fucking large turkey. So,
listen, I've been one. I mean, I do enjoy turkey, especially the dark meat. That's where it's at. Mm-hmm. But if you're not a fan of like turkeys or you don't want anything big, just buy everyone a Cornish game hen.
Yeah, Sarah said that too. Yeah, my wife said that.
And just be like, oh, here's your Cornish game hen.
Yep.
You got yourself a little nice little ball chicken.
So, someone at work today, because you know the inevitable Thanksgiving talk creeps up on work meetings. They said that they do prime rib, and I was like, I would definitely be down for that. I would definitely be.
That's also a gated community, and you need a passcode to get in, and you know, be on the first basis.
Everybody gets their own prime rib, served with a horseradish sauce and
the potato.
I would not be opposed to a prime rib Thanksgiving. That is for sure. I'm not one of those people that has to have turkey at Thanksgiving. I just don't need it. Don't care. My family is my dad and sister. They fucking swear by it. They were like, we are not having a Thanksgiving without turkey. So turkey we have, and we're cooking it, and it's fucking 19 pounds.
But they would say that, though, just for tradition's sake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't be mind if, like, mixed it up. Because, I mean, again, it's like with Christmas. Christmas is so versatile with the main course.
Mm-hmm.
You can do turkey again. You can do, like, you know, because that is, you know, Christmas turkey's traditional.
Sure.
You can do a nice spiral ham, you know, nice hairy honey ham.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a goose or duck. Mm-hmm. You can do lasagna, you know.
We used to do turkey, and we then swapped over to lasagna because I guess lasagna was considered a bit easier to manage. I wouldn't mind a chicken parm Christmas myself. I know a lot of people do like kind of like pasta, especially Italians do pasta dishes for Christmas, and I definitely would not mind a chicken parm style.
Imagine like a nice meatball sub for your dinner.
people would be thinking like, what, meatball sub? But yeah, that's my, you know,
a nice meatball grinder, chicken parm like grinder.
Yeah, that's my holy grail of meals. So yeah, hit me up with those meatball subs. So I guess we should get to the topic at hand here. Like, of course, we're talking about Thanksgiving. It's 2023 Thanksgiving.
No. I thought we were revisiting Dutch. You're going to try to win me over this year.
No, yeah, that's what I was going to say, though. I mean, it's Thanksgiving season. We've already done most of the main Thanksgiving movies that you can think of.
There's one left.
What do we got?
Alice's Restaurant.
Yeah, no, see, I'm not really clamoring to do that one.
But that literally is a Thanksgiving
movie. I know it is a Thanksgiving movie. It's just not something that's like, ooh, got to do that one. I don't even know what we talk about.
Why not? The song's great. The movie's just as great in song form. Bunch of hippies wandering around for an hour and a half.
Mm. Well, we've done most of the main ones. We've done Dutch. We've done Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. We did.
And the fact that you always mention Dutch first always hurts. Like,
well, to be honest, like you're going to
John Hughes's like D level for like, you know.
Well, I mean,
making the same film from like 85 up to 94.
You're right. I mean, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is definitely the better movie of the John Hughes. And John Hughes directed Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He didn't direct Dutch, which I think is one of the things that we mentioned in the episode that we did on Dutch, is that Dutch does suffer from editing issues. It should have been pared down a little bit. There's things in the movie that should have been, you know, deleted scenes or extended scenes, and they don't need to be there. But I mean, I like Dutch. I like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. We've done those. We did Thanksgiving. That was like our first episode for Thanksgiving. And we've even done...
I say where we drink Keystone Light.
Yeah. We've even done like the lower budget stuff. Like we did Blood Rage one year.
Bubba Hotep.
You know, what we haven't gotten into is Hallmark Thanksgiving movies. Because while they don't really specialize in Thanksgiving movies, there are a few. I think there's one that is like the Thanksgiving Day Parade or something like that. I don't know. We haven't gotten into that. But we've done pretty much most of the Thanksgiving movies. I think there are a couple more that we haven't done that I have my eye on. But it just made sense this year to do the one that was coming out for this year. That was the one Thanksgiving movie hitting theaters. And of course, that's Eli Roth's Thanksgiving. Now, the title Thanksgiving for this movie is very makes it very difficult to search. If you've noticed on Google, you search Thanksgiving 2023, what are you going to get? You're going to get news articles about this year's Thanksgiving, or Google saying, yep, Thanksgiving is on November 23rd this year. You know, it's a very difficult movie to Google.
I'm kind of surprised Eli Roth didn't slap his name on it, like Eli Roth's Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Eli Roth presents Thanksgiving. Yeah. Eli Roth serves Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Well, that a good one, right? They should have done that instead.
Ooh, there you go. See, no. you should be in the marketing department.
That's right. So this movie is based on Eli Roth's short 2-minute fake trailer that he made for the Grindhouse movies. And they came out in what, like 2006, 2007, something like that.
I think 2004.
Something like that. Yeah, somewhere in the mid 2000s, I believe. That was the double feature.
Yeah, 2007.
2007, yeah. That was the double feature with Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez. And there was a bunch of fake trailers that were inserted into the movie.
Nazi women of the SS.
Yeah.
Werewolf women of the SS. Thanks,
Rob Zombie's contribution. They inserted a bunch of trailers, and one of them was Thanksgiving. And people were kind of loving it because that trailer is extremely campy, very much a throwback to classic 80s slasher movies, especially ones that are situated around holidays. And very clearly in that trailer, there were sequences in it that were just basically pulled from the holiday slashers. So you like the beginning opening part of it is from like Halloween 2, you know, like the walk through the kitchen and grabbing a knife from the meat tray and stuff like that. You had April Fool's Day in there. The soundtrack to the trailer is pulled from Creepshow. So all of that stuff was very like kind of nostalgic, and it really just hit a nerve because it was just so good. And not only that, but we didn't even mention cheerleader jumping on a trampoline topless and falling on a knife inserted into her vagina. So I mean, all of that kind of led to a popular
symbolism.
Yeah. It led to a popular resurgence of just people asking for, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this was an actual movie? And Eli Roth said, I don't have anything else going on right now. That would be cool. AMC didn't ask me back for my History of Horror show, so let's make the Thanksgiving movie. And I joke a little bit because I do think he's been working on some stuff. I think he even did like a shark documentary or some shit like that recently. It was like about killing sharks, like how, you know, they're unnecessarily killing sharks and stuff. But
you know, it's funny because Eli Roth's Wikipedia page, his picture from that's like his main picture from 2009. He looks like the dude that was like in the Girls Gone Wild commercials.
Yeah, he does kind of. Yeah.
Let's go. I mean, have a great time.
Eli Roth is at a pretty kind of a roller coaster trajectory. You know, he started out really strong, did Hostel, one of his big movies. Really, really big in the torture porn genre at that time, which is literally probably, you know, Saw kind of gets named for torture porn, but Hostel was really the one that was, you know, over the top torture porn to the point where like the movie is basically just torture.
Well, so I'll say Saw's not even really torture porn,
especially the first one. Yeah.
And the first one's not, but you know, the sequel's there. But, and I do remember seeing Hostel when it came out, like, I didn't see it in theaters because obviously I wasn't old enough, but I did, you know, catch it. Wasn't a fan.
I think I did see Hostel in theaters, to be honest with you.
And I never bothered seeing Hostel 2 because it's like, I have zero interest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, too, because again, until we started doing this podcast, I'd never seen a Saw film because after hearing like when like Saw 3 or whatever comes out, like, oh, the guy's legs are getting twisted around and snapping. And after, you know, personally, you know, like breaking my own leg gruesomely. It's like, I don't want to see that. So, like, that kind of stuff, you know, for a long time. A lot of those mid-2000s, like, torture porn videos, I totally skipped out on, because it's like, that's not what I'm interested in.
Yeah. And, I mean, we actually even, I didn't mention, but Cabin Fever being Eli Roth's first movie, that one is actually probably one of my favorite Eli Roth movies. I think that one actually works really well. And but other than that, Eli hasn't really had that many big hits. And I think the last one that we saw was his Death Wish remake, which was dreadful. Everything that we did not want about a Death Wish movie, it pretty much was in there. So we, you know, he's had a kind of a weird track record. Getting back now into making more of a traditional horror movie, a slasher movie with Thanksgiving, it was hard to know what exactly we were going to get, because I'll be honest, I liked the Thanksgiving trailer. You cannot sustain the amount of schlock that's in that trailer for a 90-minute movie, much less a 105-minute movie, which Thanksgiving is. You know, it's an hour and 45 minutes long. So going into it, I was like, well, there's just no way that this narrative is going to be able to maintain that sort of, like, you know, over-the-top ridiculousness throughout. So I didn't really watch many trailers. I didn't really have tried to, you know, lower my expectations. Didn't really have much in the way of knowledge of what was going to go on in this movie. I don't know about you. Did you go into it with any knowledge about it, really?
No, I just knew, you know, Eli Roth was taking this Thanksgiving trailer, which I was familiar with, because I have seen, you know, the Grindhouse movies and the trailers and stuff, and, you know, the trailer or something, though I haven't seen it in a long time, is something that's, you know, always stuck in my head, because it's, you know, resonates in your mind. You know, Thanksgiving. Come see Thanksgiving. You know, and then, like, somebody gets, you know, brutally assaulted, and then Thanksgiving.
So,
it works as, like, a trailer for that, but, I mean, like, for me going into this, I have, like, zero interest in this as, like, a concept or anything. It's like, there's really nothing this film could really do that would probably make it, like, stick out and be like, wow, we needed this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the trailer works so well because it does take the place of, like, a 80s trailer where you were basically shown the entire movie in the 2 minutes. Because that's what Thanksgiving does, is it just shows you all of these disparate parts that add up to, like, a ridiculous slasher movie, and you can kind of glean all of the elements to it from just that trailer. So it's really nice, but turning that into a feature-length film is definitely an undertaking. So that's what Thanksgiving 2023 is trying to make that trailer into a full movie using various elements from that trailer in the final cut. And we'll talk after we, you know, after our break with our beer, we'll talk about if that's effective or not. But first, let's talk about what we got here, because we've been talking about this beer, trying to get it, waiting patiently for it to come out, as it's been announced. And we finally have it. You were able to find it, Martin.
Mm-hmm. So back on the podcast for the first time in a while, we have a new Genesee Brewing offering from the fine folks in Rochester. Early in the year, they had an election. They had about 5 different beers on there. One was an apple pear beer. They're vague in the descriptions too. They were just, like, you know, based, like, kind of summaries of, like, what they would be. Like, it didn't describe what beers would entail or anything. They're just like, this is what the beers, like, you're voting on are. One of them was a winterberry, so it'd be like a rat and had, like, raspberry and blackberry on the can, like winterberry ale or lager. One was a pear cinnamon beer. one of them.
Let me pull up on the website.
But they had, they were, you know, let, they let people vote because it was going to be dropping at the same time as, you know, November. So they let people vote on, like, what beers you wanted. And,
right.
And they, pear cinnamon, apple, winter berry, and winter citrus.
Mm-hmm.
And the winner was the winter citrus,
which
is what I voted for.
I voted for winter berry. But either way, I guess, do you feel like what we got from the citrus pills is what would be considered a winter citrus?
Nah.
Because
to be honest with you, outside of, like, I don't see a lot, because it says lemon, lime, and tangerine. The only fruit there that's even slightly winter is tangerine, because, you know, right. Oranges for, you know, Christmas.
Yeah.
It's not a bad beer, but, like, I have a hard time kind of, you know, scratching my noggin now and be like, how the fuck does, you know, this really fit into the winter?
Right. That was my thought, is that, you know, tangerine and lime. Tangerine, yeah, a little bit. I would say more along the lines of, like, a blood orange or clementine or something like that would be, like, a winter citrus. So I definitely was not expecting tangerine and lime. And it's interesting because I didn't realize that they phrased it in that manner, that they said winter citrus when you were voting. Because I'm curious now if when people voted, they were, like, not thinking along these lines of what a winter citrus would be.
Well, I'm kind of curious if they even had down yet what they wanted the beer to be.
Right.
Like, it's probably a rough sketch. And, like, they probably, like, you know, as they're brewing, trying to figure out what would work and what, you know, wouldn't work, you know, as they're, you know, testing it out. Because it's not like, I'm pretty sure they probably have, like, a base idea for, like, the recipes. But, I mean, they probably didn't have anything super hard down until they, like, all right, you know, what are we going to do?
Yep.
And testing to see how are they going to make it, you know, make it work.
Yeah. I mean, so basically what this amounted to, this vote, was we eventually got the Jenny Citrus Pils, which is, like we said, a tangerine and lime flavored beer, and basically has become, like, part of their winter seasonal offering for this year, which is an interesting choice because I don't necessarily think that this beer is that suited to a winter style. Because, you know, the regardless of the citrus, I don't know that this, you know, this beer tastes a lot like it would go on a very nice, like, late spring day or early summer, in the way that it tastes. And as you said too, which I couldn't really put my finger on at first, when I tasted this, I was like, that tastes pretty familiar. And you said Bud Light Lime. And then it immediately came to me. I was like, it's basically like a Bud Light Lime. And it's kind of a cross between Bud Light Orange, which admittedly I have not had very much of. I think I've only had it one time.
I've had that one tall boy that I got. It was disgusting.
Oh, really? I didn't mind it.
I did not like the Bud Light Orange at all. Like, it was nasty.
Huh.
I'm not a big Anheuser-Busch fan to begin with, but the Bud Light, let's say Bud Lime does hit, like, a nice spot on a very hot summer day, like, where it's like, yeah, that'll do.
Yeah, Bud Lime is, you know, it's one of my nostalgia beers. I do really like that one. Bud Light Orange, I thought, was okay the one time I had it. And this beer is kind of like a combination of those. See, you know, it pairs that orange tangerine flavor with a lime. I think the lime still comes out more in this one. I do get a lot of lime to it. There's a little bit of that tangerine, and I think maybe a little bit of the tangerine rind bitterness to it. But ultimately, what I think about this Citrus Pils is that it's just an okay beer. It's definitely not one of Jenny's best specialty beers that they've made, in terms of, like, their seasonal packs. Because I think even, like, the cranberry color, the Kolsch that they made, I think that one's, miles better for a winter style, like, Thanksgiving era.
The cranberry orange color beer.
Yeah. that one's miles better in terms of like what you would want around this time period than the citrus pills, in my opinion. And again, we talked about this before, but I would not, if it was me marketing it, I would not release the cranberry orange Kolsch during the summer. Or the fall, I mean.
Yeah, they released they released it with the Oktoberfest this year.
Instead of it being
like a fall beer, which, you know, the cranberry and orange would fit into the season, it got released in late August with the Oktoberfest, which,
yeah, I think that was
really, really grinded my gears, because it's like, shit, I like both of them, but it's like, I want a Marzen, goddamn it, you know, not.
That should have been a staggered start. I think that they should have had Oktoberfest in August and then released maybe in September or October for the cranberry orange Kolsch. But anyway, I mean, in this case, like the citrus pills, I think it's a good beer. It's not great. Doesn't blow my mind. They do make a lot better beers than this one, in my opinion. I think that this one, it does have a nice limey, slight orange tangerine flavor to it. It kind of taste like a Bud Light Lime. For me, I get a lot of like a bitterness towards the end. Like the aftertaste of it is a lot more bitter than I was expecting, and I would prefer, to be honest with you. I know you said like Bud Light Lime is a little bit too sugary for you. In this case, this beer is a little bit too on the bitter side, and I'm not sure where that's coming from. I don't know if that's coming from like the tangerine acidity, the rindiness of it. I don't know if it's some of the malts that they're using. Just for whatever reason, I'm getting a sort of like a bitter aftertaste, and it's not my favorite in terms of what Jenny's released so far. So a little bit disappointing for me. I think it's still pretty good, just not one of their best beers that they've had.
I do like it a lot. Jenny's, I mean, we love Genesee on here, and we do it all the time. You know, I've put Ryan into the fold. We've been trying to get sponsored by them for a long time. We've always said on here, we're not sponsored by them, but goddamn it, we like their products a lot. I do like this beer. I think it works pretty well. I'm a little disappointed that, like, this isn't a summer beer. And that kind of sucks, too, because though this is good, the Ruby Red Kolsch will always be, like, that's, like, an incredibly special, warm place in my heart, and that's, like, irreplaceable for, like, what I want in a summer beer. So that, this beer kind of falls short in that regard, too. I do like it. It is very, like, much like a Bud Light Lime, but I would say, though, it does have definitely more of a less sugary, diabetic, like pure, like, you know, just corn syrupy taste to it. It does have a nice tangerine bitterness to it. Because it's a Pilsner, it's got like a nice slight brightiness to it. It's well bodied, very crisp, easy to drink. I like it a lot. I think it's a really good, you know, crushable beer. I just think it's kind of like the odd man out in the rotation, though. Like, if you were, like, if I would, I would have this over, like, say, the Pineapple Kolsch that they've done the last couple of years in the summer with the Ruby Red Kolsch. I would take this as, like, a replacement, because though I do like the Pineapple Kolsch, I do think it's kind of, like, you know, whatever. I mean, but I do like it a lot. And I do think it's definitely, like, a big step up from Bud Light Lime. Because, I think we've done, like, the Labatt, like, fruit flavors on here, too, like the lime, the blood orange and stuff. One of the reasons why we like those beers more than, like, Bud Light Lime is because it's a less sugary, less, like, artificial-tasting fruit to it. You get more of a beer flavor to it. You know, the fruitiness does pair much better with the beer than Bud Light Lime just being straight, like, here's, like, you know, your dose of very sugary lime. I like it a lot. I just think it's kind of, it's not what I'd want a winter seasonal, though. You know, this is, especially now that it's getting colder and colder, as a witch's tit up here in upstate New York with our freezing rain already and nonsense. It's not what I'd be looking for come like Christmas time. As I put in John Saxon's Yule Log.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Thanksgiving. Eli Roth's new movie about Thanksgiving. And you know what? I should preface this by saying, I don't know that I think Thanksgiving is the best title for this movie. It's more seems like the title should be Black Friday. But they couldn't use that because I think there's that Bruce Campbell movie called Black Friday. So he was like, fuck, this movie is technically centered all around Black Friday, but now I have to kind of fucking maneuver around that, call it Thanksgiving. Because this movie really, you know, the whole opening of it is basically like, hey, it's 2004. But it's not. In the movie, it's actually 2022. But it's like it's 2004. And people in this small town are just fucking beating each other to get in line.
Yeah, in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
We gotta run on down to the packy store before we go all down to the right mind to get our fucking shit for the fucking game. You want sock shit this year?
And the funny
thing, I say, young Martin and Ryan back in 2004 were going to our local mall at 2 in the morning to watch everyone run around with their heads cut off and waiting for JCPenney to be the last one to open up at like 6 o'clock and watch people storm in there to buy nothing in part.
To get, I think, a toaster or a waffle maker. I think it was a waffle maker.
In the movie, it was the waffle maker.
Oh, yeah. You know, but I think ours was something stupid like that, too. Like
you grabbed a random...
It was a crock pot or something? I can't remember.
You grabbed a random case of luggage. It's the one when I sold it.
That's right.
And you were running around, and you're like, oh, wait.
Well, what I was doing was
I
was being the guardian angel for some poor sap who came in late. Said, what the fuck? All the luggage is gone. And then he's walking around the store so dejected. All of a sudden, there's a, you know, a halo coming down from above. And he sees that one lone luggage just thrown around the store somewhere. And that was me. That was all my doing. You're welcome, whoever got that for a Christmas gift that year. You're welcome. Major Christmas.
It's like, what a sad thing that we used to do. Like, are you kidding me?
Well, we didn't. And I would like participate. We were just there.
I know. The shit show. I mean, it's just funny. Like, to think about, like, really, like, you're in that much of a rush to run out and buy, like, you know.
Well, and I think
we got these new things called pigs. I gotta go buy $250 on a new pellet machine.
I think that's what this movie is trying to show in its opening scene. You know, it's Thanksgiving, basically. It's still Thursday. There, the family's already celebrated, and this guy is a manager at the local department store, which in 2022, for one thing, is...
It's not a local department store.
If you've succeeded in a local department store in 2022... then you are funded by the Russian mafia, which is also in this movie for some reason, or the mob or something else is really keeping you afloat, because there is just no way that
the town has on the books you can't have Walmart there.
Yeah.
We don't want no fucking Walmart. We want our Ames. We don't need Bezos and Amazon. You can't buy anything on Amazon.com here in Plymouth. Hey, the site comes up blocked.
Go
to your local store.
Probably the most far-fetched thing about this movie is to see just random local man who runs a fucking large department store in town. And it's the only thing in the area, 50-mile radius, which I don't even think Plymouth's not even that far outside of Boston, I don't believe. But everybody is flocking in this opening scene to this store called Right Mart, and they are just waiting, you know, outside, queuing up. And what we were talking about when we were watching this movie is, like, people just don't do that anymore. Like, if this movie was set in the late 2000s, yeah, of course, people were doing it on Thanksgiving night. People were sitting at the dinner table on Thanksgiving going, what are you going to get? What are you going to go out to the store and buy? What are you going to get? We're going to go after this. They better serve the pie soon because we got to get down there at 6. People were doing that then. But now, I don't think anybody really does that anymore because everybody, it, First of all, every store across the country is October 30th. They're putting out their flyers saying Black Friday deals already here.
Dude, I've been like getting bombarded the last like 3 days with fucking emails like from like Walmart, Target.
Yeah,
like,
your Black Friday deals are here.
It's like, I didn't buy anything then. I'm not going to buy anything now.
But the whole idea is that Black Friday deals already happened. It's not a huge thing anymore to like go to the store at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. And not only that, but most people are just not even bothering at this point. They are just doing their shopping online. So it's
that's probably where Amazon made its most money. It's probably over the past like 15 years. Like, yeah, sure, it's not gonna have these fat bucks get out of their, you know, ass.
Yeah, right.
Down to Best Buy anymore. You just do it online. It'd be great though if Bezos added like a little function, like where as you're buying something, you know how some things will be like one left in stock, like as you're buying it. If you're the last one, if you could post like "Eat my dick, assholes," like, you know.
Well, they do have that sort of like, yeah, this like there's only two left. They do have the something like that, but yeah.
No, I'm saying like, so you in comma as you're like the one then like, you know, you
that was me.
You get your order through, so you can be like, yeah, fuck you. You know, I get the PlayStation 5.
They should just put out an ad that's like, yeah, just sit your fucking fat ass in your armchair, kick it back. You don't need to go anywhere. Just fucking push the button. Buy our shit. But yeah, so the whole premise of this, the opening part of Thanksgiving, is that this massive mob forms outside of Rite Mart. This guy's a manager. He's got these kids. They all come inside. They're like wanting to get stupid shit. Like, oh, I'm going to get the best deal on this new phone. And I got to go in there and fucking get... What is it that they actually want to go in there and get? Just a new phone, right? He just wants to buy a new phone because this fucking phone broke or something. And so they go in there and they're able to get in there because the girl, I forget their fucking names because it's not important. Their names aren't important. Jessica, the girl, that her father is the owner of Rite Mart. So she is the one who lets everybody into the store, and they you know, basically they start a flash mob because everybody sees them in there and they're like, why are these kids in there? And we don't get to go in right now. Why can't we go in? Because it's time for us to go in. You got to open the doors. So it starts flash mob. Everybody storms in, and mass pandemonium occurs because people are animals, and when they see their fucking free waffle maker, they go absolutely ape shit.
And it's a lot like Jingle All the Way with them trying to get their fucking Turbo Man.
Yeah,
all that was missing was Sinbad and Arnold.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, which by the way, fun fact, sorry to cut you off. I at work the other day, because they gave out us some cookies because it was International Cookie Day the other day. I don't know if you knew that.
Did not.
I got to break out. I got to break out. Your wife's cookies taste so good.
Phil Hartman.
And people got the reference. Okay. They were like in their mid-40s. They were like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, Jingle All the Way.
Put the cookie down now. Put my wife's cookie down now.
Were they like, that's a really fucking weird reference?
No, they got it. They appreciated it. Like, yeah,
hilarious.
Great. Because that's one of my favorite. By the way, like, you know, go back and listen to our podcast episode on Jingle All the Way. That is one of my favorite lines from that movie. It's just Phil Harp being, like, you know, douchebag and just being like, your wife's cookies are so delicious.
That's fine. I think this opening scene, which is, like I said, is like Thanksgiving / Black Friday. I think it's probably one of the best ones at Thanksgiving. It's a fun moment. It's a fucking over-the-top hilarious. I don't know in some cases if it's meant to be so over-the-top that it's hilarious, but it truly comes out that way.
You know, I would say South Park did it better with the Game of Thrones Black Friday episode, and then the one woman as they're waiting outside of the mall, she cuts a wrestling promo. She's like, if anyone thinks they're going to get an Xbox before I get one for my kids, they can kiss my fat vagina. Well, I'm going to go in there and eat some cheer. See, that's what they should have done here.
Yeah. I mean, but I think this does work out pretty well. I mean, in my opinion, I thought that this was a pretty entertaining moment because it does have that element of like, yep, this is what people do during Black Friday, or they used to do. You know, the trampling, the fucking, you know, smashing into people, throwing
carts and carts and breaking,
throwing them through boxes and shit like that, throughout tossing TVs around. But it takes Eli Roth takes it one step further, and he goes into this really ridiculous territory where probably the most ridiculous scene is where Gina Gershon's character, she's basically like the motherly figure. She's so angelic in this movie for a while, and then all of a sudden she gets run down by a cart and falls on the floor, and two people just fucking ram into her.
And her hair, her fucking weave gets caught in the wheel, and it's like pulling back her scalp. And
yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's you know, totally over the top and disgusting, brutal. And I loved it. I thought it was really hilarious. Now, is it supposed to be hilarious? I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the issues that I took from Thanksgiving in general, because the movie does tend to want to be a more traditional slasher in the sense that it's trying, you know, obviously it's trying to ape from the classics of the holiday season slashers. And at the same time, it is very similar in style to what we got from the new Screams as well. You know, presenting, here's a bunch of teens, here's this predicament that they're in, here, there's a killer on the loose, and here you go, do what you're going to do. It does have a very distinctive Scream flavor to it, and I think, as you said too, it has a very, like, overall 90s slasher revival element to it.
I think it's also, too, like, because it does have two writers, I think it's a tale of, because it's Eli Roth and Jeff Rendell writing. I think it's more probably like Eli Roth handled the writing for this, you know, the killing and the machinations for, you know, the gore, and then Jeff filled in like the story beats. And that's that to me, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but that to me would make the most sense, because you're right, the film is totally tonally bipolar. Like, it wants to be campy, and it is campy, and it has incredibly over-the-top kills and gore and violence. On the other hand, though, this film is an hour and 46 fucking minutes long with deadpan bullshit nonsense fol-de-rol going on in this town with a cast of characters that you couldn't give three fucks about that you're supposed to care about. You were saying, like, oh, it's like Scream. And I go, no, it's not like Scream, because Scream has lovable stamps you can root for. I don't remember, outside of Patrick Dempsey, a single soul in this goddamn film. They are so one beat, one note cliche that I think the film is totally hampered by the fact that it's 25 minutes too long.
Well, yeah.
If it was a quick romp of, like, this happened, this sets this thing's in motion, here are these people, and they get what's coming to them with these elaborate kills and, like, gore, fine. But the fact that, like, it's a meandering nonsense plot for, like, an hour and 20 minutes is what really, and I mean really, drags this film down for me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get what you're saying, because I think part of the reason why we don't really get to meet the characters that well is because the film is often torn between following the normal slasher pattern of, hey, there are these teens and they're being targeted and let's see what happens to them, and then also tying in the fact that the killer is really targeting them plus some other people that were involved in the Thanksgiving, Black Friday, you know, massacre that happened last year. So not only is he targeting these teens, and they're, you know, they're the movie's focal point and our, you know, protagonists, but there's also all of these other scenes of various other people just getting murdered, right? So, like, because those are the ones that the film focuses on the most. Our teens, the protagonists, nothing really happens to them for probably a good, you know, hour and 15 minutes where they're not really in much danger. Like, things happen to them. The killer's not really targeting them. He's targeting others. And that's where kind of like the whodunit comes in of, like, who could be doing this? Who is enacting their revenge from the previous Thanksgiving massacre that occurred? I think spending that much time on working up to including the kids, is leaving out a lot of characterization that you do kind of need for the kids. Because, like you said, I agree. The characters, our protagonists, are very forgettable. They really don't have anything there to tether you to, like, caring what happens to them. I think there's some weird beats to it too. Like, you know, all of a sudden, you don't really see much of her throughout the movie. But then the blonde chick, what's her name? Amy, I think it is. She all of a sudden becomes a focal point where we go home with her. We see her, like, home life. We see that she has, like, a fucking Russian mobster dad and living in, like, a perpetually renovated mansion.
Yulia.
She, you know, basically, like, she's not a main character. We don't really know much about her. But then all of a sudden, the film kind of shifts to focusing on her. And there's not really that much there for you to, like, care what happens to her. I mean, of course, you're just like, oh, you know, she's part of the group, I guess. But other than that, there's not, you know, there's nothing there where you really care that much about what's going on with that character. And the same is true of, like, pretty much everybody that the film wants you to suspect. So you have Bobby, who's the star golden arm pitcher, who was
golden. I love him too. Which also too, golden arm, not like, you know, like a inventive nickname or anything. He's just golden arm.
Yeah,
goes golden arm.
He's injured in the previous Thanksgiving massacre because for whatever reason he wants to go help people and he gets his arm stepped on and, you know, breaks it and then disappears for an entire year from everybody that he spoke to, including his girlfriend.
Which was funny, too, because I think he's in high school still at the same time. So he's like, yeah, I've been in college. You ghosted me for a year. And it's like, wouldn't he still been in high school? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that the movie doesn't offer good explanations for its character dynamics. Like, Bobby doesn't really make sense as a character. It literally just treats him as like, yep, he just disappeared for a whole year and no one was suspecting anything or no one cared. Probably the biggest thing is that, like, I think you said after the movie, because I asked you, who did you suspect throughout the movie? And you're like, I didn't really care enough to suspect anyone. You didn't really feel like...
Which hurts me to say, because I do pride myself on, like, being like, yeah, got it first try, like, figured it out. When you're like, oh, so did you think he was gonna, who the killer ends up being is the killer? I was like, I didn't care. Like, I had no investment in trying to figure it out. Because also, too, like, there's no real red herrings in this film. There's no red herrings on, like, who's your killer. No real suspects outside of, like, two people. So the sheriff and Ryan would be like two people you'd think to be the killers.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, there's really... Yeah, it doesn't present you with, like, you know, the true whodunit of, like, who could it possibly be. It's more like who makes sense that it even...
could be.
Remotely could be. Yeah, because, like, we know that it can't be any of these other people that were shown being attacked. Like, it's just not... It just, you know, wouldn't make sense. So, the film, you know, it kind of does have that going for it, that it's really not... it doesn't have that slasher element down to it of, like, the mystery behind the killer. And I feel like, you know, with something like Scream, there's always, you know, that's kind of like ingrained in this franchise, is like, oh, who's it gonna be? And when you're watching a Scream movie,
could it be two, could it be three?
Right, when you're watching that movie, you're kind of thinking like, oh, how are they gonna circumvent my expectations of who's going to be the killer? Like, what kind of red herrings are they gonna throw my way? And I feel like with Thanksgiving, you do have that expectation, because it does feel like Scream in a lot of ways, of being presented with the clues that you're going to be able to piece together who the killer is. And then it really kind of fizzles out at the end. The reveal is kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. You know,
all it was missing was the Saw, like, wrap up stuff, as it's like, you know, everything's been pieced together at the end, like, dun 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 dun.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Saw too, because this movie does take a lot of beats from Saw, and the fact that, like, a lot of times the movie is relying on, like,
We need to track this cell phone signal. Where could they be broadcasting this live Instagram footage from?
In fact, they were actually at one of John Kramer's many warehouses that he owned.
Yeah. But the funny thing that with Lexi, and I guess it makes sense in the scheme of when you think about like, oh, well, maybe they did want to do a bad job. But like the police force is awful in this movie. We just tear off horrible. Like they're just like,
there's no John Saxon here.
Well, no, but it also is, it almost amounts to something like, well, what is like, basically, yeah, they're like, what is Instagram? Like, oh, they can do live video from their phone. Well, then their phone must be there, and they just don't take into account any of, like, the most normal things that people would do, like...
Yeah, well, that's what's funny, too, because, again, like, this film, with especially the technology, they're kind of waving around like their dick in hand, like, look, you can get likes on a video! Isn't this so 2010?
Yeah, they have, like, fake live leak videos.
Yeah, like a lot of that, like, that... kind of crap ain't gonna age well at all, because again, like, you're right, like the fact that like the sheriff's like, what do you mean this, like, what are you talking about? It's like, dude, the technology's existed for like 15 years now. What do you mean? I feel that way with my mom every time when she's like, I don't know how to do this on the computer. It's like, you've literally been around computers now for 40 years of your life and you can't fucking figure out how to upload a picture. You're not even trying.
It's definitely a bit cringy in this movie, and especially how it treats like the technology in such a dumb way of just like, we've been able to triangulate the signal,
and then it's like a CSI episode.
And it even like pulls from like Saw, because I think it's what Saw 3, whatever, Donnie, when they track the signal and they're like, this camera is not, it's just showing a TV screen. It's just like, it's so cliched and overdone that it actually seems really ridiculous in this movie, because it's not done smartly, in my opinion, as to like the actual use of technology. Because if they wanted to,
I was saying, if you think about it, like, again, going back to Scream 4, a dozen years before, had live streaming with a GoPro. 12 years ago, like, which then at the time would have been like peak technology. Yeah, and Wes Craven on the forefront of being smart yet again, with like, you know, the one character in the film class who's, you know, obsessively live streaming, you know, because that's like, you know, which makes sense because, you know, with the whole documentary, you know, films that were coming out at the time, like, that's great. Like, but here it's like just so, just as you said, cringy. It's just like, ugh. And a lot of the slang that they use in this film, too, it's like really like, ugh. Just pandering. Like, somebody sat down and was like, give me a list of like Gen Z slang that we can throw in here that's going to, you know, make these assholes watch this film.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes I do get a feeling of like, this it is similar in setup to like something like Seven, where, you know, you have like the various.
Stop.
I'm saying it, not even close, but the setup itself is very similar in the fact that you have like these cutaways to various murders that are presented, and then, you know, basically they're staged for the inevitable reveal. It has that element to it as well, just not done nearly as well. And I think, like, I guess the thing that kept me coming back to Thanksgiving, even though a lot of like the more mundane elements of it throughout the movie were kind of pushing me away, was just the over the top and, you know, ridiculous antics that occur during those death scenes, those gore scenes, because I think that those are probably the most interesting parts of Thanksgiving by far. And it's funny because those basically just crib or, you know, borrow from the original Thanksgiving trailer. But they do it a little bit less, I guess, risque, pushing the boundaries. So, like, if you think about the Grindhouse trailer, that was constantly just pushing boundaries, like doing things that are just explicit to be explicit for those sakes, ridiculous, over the top, like very gaudy, and gory. And in Thanksgiving, this film almost feels like someone said, whether it be producers or marketing or, you know, the MPAA, said, look, no, you're going to have to tone it back. You're not going to be able to do that for a whole...
I feel like if they did, like, the twat stabbing, that probably would have landed them max. Like, they would...
Yeah.
Because like they had... Like, that had to go. Like, they had, like...
Because I'm not saying that the film doesn't have its moments, because it really does. I think there are moments that are brutal and gory, and they work well, and it does get its point across that it's being schlocky for schlock's sake, which is what the trailer had, but it had it in spades. And I feel like this movie kind of just doesn't know what it wants to do. Does it want to be a real, true holiday slasher? Which, if that's the case, then it wouldn't go as far as it does, you know, especially if it was mimicking things like Black Christmas or Halloween, which were much more suited to suspense and atmosphere than they were actual, like, gory deaths. Thanksgiving kind of wants to do both things at once, and I feel like those are two disparate elements that don't really come together in this movie. And not only that, but, like, the actual reveals itself, and Patrick Dempsey specifically, they're very exaggerated. You know, the killer and his motivation, it's all extremely exaggerated. It's, you know, it's just not realistic. So I understand that in some capacity, this is a schlocky movie for on purpose. But at the same time, I don't think that everybody got that memo who worked on the project, because for probably a good hour of the movie, it's not, you know, it's actually just kind of standard slasher fare. And then for 45 minutes of it, it's balls to the wall, gory, and just totally outlandish. So that was probably my biggest issue with Thanksgiving. And the reason why I don't, like, while I did enjoy it, I don't think it's a lasting movie. I don't think it's something that I would return to again and again for a holiday, you know, style movie. It's not something that, like, I'm going to see myself watching every Thanksgiving. It's fine, but it doesn't hit the points that I was hoping that it would. What do you think? Like, what did you think about the other gore that's in here? You know, like all the deaths, the disembowelments, the, you know, beheadings, all that stuff. How'd you find it?
It's good. I think the violence is pretty good. Well done.
It's so practical. Most of it is practically done.
Yeah, the effects, you know, look good, and it's, well integrated. I just think the fact that, you know, you have, you know, such two tonal differences, as you were saying, you know, with the story and the actual slayings, is it's whiplash, and it's like, it doesn't fix again. If you're going to be methodical and try to be well thought out and, you know, plotting, usually for the most part, leaving the gore to a minimal is the best, because leaving it to the viewer's imagination is the most impactful thing. And then when you're going to use the gore, it's very realistic, brutal, and visceral. Here, everything's done for schlock. So, like, all the killings, heads getting knocked off, like, hell, the one girl getting baked into a turkey is like the most stupid, over the top thing in the world. It's funny, but, like, you know, it's like, that's what, like, the killer in this movie is doing. He's like fucking throwing somebody into a crematorium, tying them up, and then putting like a fucking baster in her with, you know, butter and garlic. You know, and she's getting served later on at the dinner table.
I know. I said that's going to be someone's fetish. The buttering.
You feel like, yeah, oh yeah, it's just, just like getting basted.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that the gore works. I like the practical elements to it. Like you said, like, there are some that just go so over the top that, again, totally, it just doesn't really make that much sense. I think it would have been okay, but the fact that we do have such a, such a goofy overall motive, the fact that like we get that reveal at the end, like you said, like sort of like a Saw moment where it does the flashback to the previous massacre and has to basically conjure up a reason for the motive, which is not something that we're given, you know, throughout. We're not piecing that together throughout the movie. It's more so just delivered at the end, literally rotely by the killer. Is like, yeah, this is why I did it. You didn't know that. No one else knew it because we didn't give any clues about it. But yeah, that's, you know, that's why I did it. It kind of defeats the purpose of like going through that slasher whodunit, because at the end of the movie, it's pretty clear that like, yeah, you can have notions of who you think the killer is, because there's really not that many suspects, but the main reasoning behind it, you're not really given any clues to support it. So you're just going to have to come to that conclusion without any, you know, facts to back it up. So, I mean, I liked the movie. I thought it was entertaining and fun, but also at the same time, I did find it to be tedious in those moments where we're not getting Eli Roth's brand of, you know, grindhouse aesthetic, because I do understand not being able to deliver a feature length film of schlock like the trailer, but also I do think that they missed opportunities where they could have delivered more than what we got from Thanksgiving. And I think that's probably the biggest issue, is that it's just tonally two separate movies and they kind of threw them together into one. Well, with that said, though, I think it probably is one of Eli Roth's best movies in a while. I don't know how much that's saying, but I did think that it was at least moderately enjoyable. And I guess I'll let you speak to, you know, whether you agree with that or not. But
so let's give it a rating then.
Yeah, I mean, we got to give it a rating. Let's hit one up. So, on a scale of 0 to 10, Boston accents / Donnie Wahlberg getting Dunkin' Donuts, what would you give Thanksgiving?
I give it 5.5. Sorry. I give it 5.5, Donnie. Hey, Donnie. Donnie. Hey. Remember when you sit through rocks at the Dunkin' nearby? It was cool, huh?
It's hilarious, too, with all the accents going on in here. Some people don't have any. Like, Jessica has not a nary of an accent.
Patrick Dempsey slips in and out. Yeah. Like, having a Boston accent left.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. But,
like playing Fallout 4, Far Harbor.
I'll give it 5.5. The film's literally, for me, the biggest problem is, it's 1 hour 40 fucking plus minutes long, and it has no right to be that long. While when the slashing is being done, it's fun, and there are some creative use of practical effects and pretty cool ideas, like with the kills, the plot is fucking stupid. The plot is fucking plotting. Characters are one note, immaterial, the most unimaginative, uninterested fodder. Usually the fodder that gets sent out to die, at least you have some level of connection with. None to be found here. The final girl is also fucking forgettable. There's nothing here that makes this, like, makes me think, like, taking the Thanksgiving trailer from Grindhouse and making it into a movie was a good idea. It could have been, maybe, if it was 25 minutes shorter. A nice, tight slasher film, but it's not. It suffers, like a lot of films these days do, from just being bloated as shit. I think the fact that this film has so much going on in it that is literally just fall-the-rawl and nonsense is really what pissed me off. Because, again, it's know what you're supposed to be. There's nothing wrong with being like an 80-85 minute film. If you're tight, your pacing's well done, your plot's simple enough and to get like the point across, fine. You don't need to be a fucking 2-hour epic. This film's not that, and because of that, it's the biggest damning thing in this film, and it makes it incredibly, at least for me, while we were watching, I was checking my phone every 12 minutes, being like, not fucking done yet? Fucking done yet? So 5.5 for me. I don't like it, but again, I'm not really the core audience for this, and my tolerance for horror films to be trying to be chic is minimal at best. So 5.5.
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree. I'm gonna go 7 out of 10. I did enjoy the movie. I think that it did have moments to it that I thought were really good. I like that opening moment with the Thanksgiving massacre, even though I think things that lead into it are kind of stupid. And I think that's kind of sums up how I feel about the whole movie, is that the various elements to it are good. I like, you know, all of those gore elements. I think it's really funny at times, and it has a nice commentary on the stupidity of consumerism, things that, you know, just creep into the holiday that's supposed to be about family. But at the same time, I do think that there are things here that just don't work very well, and especially, you know, trying to be two different things at once. I think that's where Thanksgiving suffers the most. With forgettable characters, it's not necessarily a movie that has a great plot to it. And even so, you know, if you take into consideration the whole idea behind the motive of the killer, it's really kind of stupid. But I do think that this does have shades of 90s slasher revival. It certainly cribs from, you know, the holiday seasonal slashers of old. And it kind of has a lot in common with the new Scream movies, which, if you've listened to our other episodes on the new Scream movies, we're not like super fans of those either. But you can see the dynamic at play in this movie, and it's very similar to what the new Screams are trying to do with their narratives as well. So I think Thanksgiving works at times. I think when it does lean into the campiness of it, it works a lot better than when it's trying to be a traditional slasher. So I give it a 7 out of 10. I would return back to it, but, you know, it's not going to be like a seasonal thing where I'm going to watch it every single year, because I don't think it's that good. But I think that it is good enough to recommend to see at least one time, see what you think, especially if you have been hit or miss with Eli Roth in the past. All right, so that leads us into our holiday season. You know, it's that time of year. You were going right from holiday to holiday.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Raindrops on roses, whiskers on kittens.
Maybe I won't.
Copper kettles.
I won't steal the SNL one. I'll just get you to come on the show and do your
song.
That's
not from SNL. That's from Conan.
Yeah.
When he did that.
I'm just going to sing the whole theme.
Is that our longest running bit on the show?
Probably. I do it every year. So yeah, are we officially doing the Lacey Chabert Hallmark holiday special?
Why not?
I gotta think of a good.
We gotta find a way to be able to watch, unless we go over to your house and watch on Hallmark itself.
We always call it Festivus, but I gotta find a better name for the Lacey Chabert holiday seasonal. I gotta find a pun on like Chabert or something.
Good luck.
Well, you know what? It's our namesake is named after Blood and Black Lace. Be Blood and Black Lacey Chabert holiday special.
That's a little too cheap.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I gotta find a pun with Chabert or something like that. And I'll see what you think. But yeah,
you really do need to go to like the Hallmark site and look up her page on Hallmark. It's hilarious. You would think it was fucking Meryl Streep.
It can be, how about Chabering Gifts? you know, like in the little drummer boy song. He came bearing gifts.
Ba-ra-ba-pum-pum.
Chabering Gifts.
A Merry Scottish Christmas.
Yeah, I think we're gonna definitely try to get that one in. That's a new Chabert Hallmark movie. So we're gonna try. It's gonna be tough because we've also talked about potentially doing a Christmas Carol holiday, episode where we just do every single different type of Christmas Carol movie.
God, that would be
so hard because you can't talk about the themes anymore. You can't be like, oh, I really liked it when he told Tiny Tim to fuck off the first time and then then came back and saved him.
No. We would grade every Christmas Carol on how did Scrooge say, go get the Christmas Carol?
That's true. Yeah, we'd have to find different things to talk about every time.
I've never read the book, but in my head, when you said that to me the other day, I was dying of laughter. Does he really say that? Go get the Christmas
Carol. Yes, he yells out the window. There's a little chap in the street. He's like, "What day is today?" He's like, "Well, I saw it's Christmas." He said, "Go and fetch the biggest goose." Yeah. No, I fucking love A Christmas Carol. I love the book.
The other thing we could do is the 70 different versions of A Miracle on 39th Street, right?
34th Street.
Whatever,
I think there's only two. There's the first one on the remake, and we watched the first one, the original, and I had never seen it. It's last year.
Natalie Wood.
Yeah. So yeah. Lacey Chabert Christmas coming up. We're going to do all kinds of Hallmark Lacey Chabert movies. It'll be interesting. I'm not going to say it's going to be fun. I'm going to say it's going to be interesting.
it's been the long-promised gift. Yeah. We have mentioned her Christmas output.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun. And I'm going to dread every week when we have to watch the new movie. Because it's hard to see me sitting down and saying, all right, let's kick on that Hallmark movie.
Another movie, it's not Christmas, it doesn't look like it's Christmas related, but she was in also The Dancing Detective, a deadly tango.
Yeah, I think that's just an actual Hallmark, a Hallmark murder mystery one, but yeah.
The Wedding Veil Journey.
It's going to be great. It's going to be a blast. We'll have to pick out...
Haul out! This is like a porn name. Haul out the Holly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to pick ones that interest us because she's been in a lot. So A Scottish Christmas. That one's definitely going to be one we're going to do because that's a new one this year. But
part of the fun joke is because these descriptions are great. For Haul Out the Holly from last year, when Emily unexpectedly spends the holiday alone at her parents' house. Their HOA, it's just that she participate in its many Christmas festivities.
I can get down with this movie. It's this theme on how HOAs are overstepping their boundaries. I can get down with that. Fuck HOA.
What an upper class white bougie thing to fucking be like, oh, your homeowners association.
I don't have an HOA. Because I live in a box.
Christmas at Castle Hart. Brooke Bennett travels to Ireland with her sister for Christmas. While there, they meet a charming Earl, who, making them for elite event planners, hires them to host an epic party at his castle.
Oh my god. That sounds amazing. Alright, so, Chabert Christmas coming up. Hope you enjoyed our episode on Thanksgiving, and hope you have a happy Thanksgiving, and hope you put this on for your family as you're eating Thanksgiving dinner. Of course, we expect you to play it loud, play it proud. Offend your
Christmas in Rome. Lacey Chabert plays an independent-minded American tour guide named Angela, who is fired from her job in Rome just before Christmas. She crosses paths with an American executive named Oliver, who wants to buy a high-end Italian ceramics company.
That's a must. We gotta do that one.
Oliver hires Angela to be his tour guide around the Eternal City, as the owner of the ceramics company won't sell it to him until he learns the heart and soul of Rome.
Wow.
But is there another heart and soul he may win? Starring Lacey Chabert and Sam Page.
Someone is working at Hallmark and really putting dedication into writing those synopses.
Love, romance, and chocolate. That's a Valentine's Day one.
Wow.
Pride, Prejudice, and Mistletoe.
You're going to have a blast with these.
Oh, my God. This is going to be the greatest Christmas ever. By the way, before you sign us off, go to your YouTube machine and type in John Saxon Yule Log and treat yourself.
That's right.
To the finest kindling around.
Yeah, I for Cold Splatation and on the recommendation of Martin, I created the John Saxon Yule Log, the holiday log, where it's basically a blazing fire from Tenebrae at the opening.
Wrong holiday!
It's the opening credits to Tenebrae, and it starts off, and it's just the fire, and then all of a sudden it cuts in, and it's with John Saxon in the credits.
And the most magical hour ever. Ryan, after 30-plus years of me being screwed, John Saxon's Yule Log has single-handedly made me Scrooge yell and get the Christmas goose, because it's so wonderful.
You know, I'm glad you appreciate it, because I don't think anybody else has appreciated it to the extent. It hasn't really gotten that many views.
I was playing it at work, and they're like, why are you playing Christmas music? I go, you don't understand.
Yeah.
You don't understand. It's a John Saxon Yule Log. Do you know who John Saxon is? No. Come by the fire. Let me tell you a tale.
It hasn't caught on like I think it should, honestly.
Well, gotta get into that Chinese TikTok algorithm.
I know, that's right. I'm gonna have to get it on TikTok and show it off. I'm gonna have to post just a quick snippet of it and say, go check out the holiday Yule Log. You'll want to put it on during your Christmas festivities,
because that is a nice roaring fire, and the music that's playing too is great. The one bad thing is there's no Carol of the Bells. That's the one negative thing, because, you know, you're a big fan of Carol of the Bells. You know, that's your Home Alone song of choice.
It's true. All right. Well, thanks for listening to our episode on Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoyed. We are on pretty much any podcast app you can think of. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, our home base at anchor.fm, which is now Spotify. Leave us a nice review and subscribe on there. That always helps us out. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. And we have an email address at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write to us, let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you want us to cover for films, and we'll take that into consideration. And then finally, you can donate to us on our Patreon page or on our Spotify page. Any donations you send our way will be put back towards beer, so we appreciate that in advance. My triglycerides, however, do not thank you. So, thanks for listening. Hope to see you back for our Lacey Chabert Christmas celebration as we start that. And I'm going to say next week, because we got movies to cover. So we're going to start that next week. We'll get a little head start on our Christmas holiday season.
A royal Christmas. Prince Leopold, heir to the throne of Coridinia, has no ambitions of marrying into royalty after falling in love with Emily Taylor, a humble seamstress from Philadelphia. But the young prince's wishes are challenged by Queen Isadora's, Leopold's mother, who has other plans for her son. Oh, that has Gene Seymour in it.
Sounds magical.
What a wonderful time of year.
I know. All right, well, thanks for listening. Hopefully you come back for our Lacey Chabert month. As you can see, you'll want to listen to it. So
it's going to be our greatest Christmas yet.
That's right. All right. Thanks for listening. And until next time,
take care. That's why we can't do Santa Claus season 2, because we're running out of Disney Plus money.
That's right.